Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 379. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is This Show Is So Gay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay. Like us, because we sure as heck like you. What an incredible show we have for you this week. Let me introduce our guest. Kenyon Farrow is an award-winning writer and activist, currently the U.S. and Global Health Policy Director at the Treatment Action Group. Kenyon has been an HIV prevention and treatment activist and writer since 1998, when he joined the staff at the AIDS Task Force of Greater Cleveland, right here in Cleveland, Ohio. Since then, he has worked on campaigns that bring together HIV, criminal justice, and housing policy issues, focusing on Black and LGBTQ communities. He's the former executive director of Queers for Economic Justice. He helped launch Project Unshackle. He's done so many different things. He is the co-editor of Letters from Young Activists, Today's Rebels Speak Out. His work has appeared in the anthologies Spirited, Affirming the Soul of Black Lesbian and Gay Identity, Against Equality, Queer Critiques of Same-Sex Marriage, and quite a few more. His work has also appeared in a ton of different publications like The Atlantic, The Huffington Post, so many more. Kenyon was named to Out Magazine's Out 100, The Advocate Magazine's 40 Under 40, Black Entertainment Television's Modern Black History Heroes, and I think the most prestigious of all, This Show Is So Gay's favorite guests of all of our guests. Kenyon, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be back.
Let's start. Can we start with some happy things? First, a belated happy birthday to you, sir.
Thank you so much. I had a great birthday, too. So,
how does Kenyon Farrow celebrate his birthday? And then I will tell you how it matched up with how I think you celebrate it.
Well, you know what? For years, I used to throw huge parties. I mean, for years, some of my birthday parties, I have to say, in Brooklyn, New York, were pretty legendary. But this birthday, I happened to be in Fort Lauderdale for some work reasons last weekend. And a bunch of folks I know were at the conference. And so I had a couple, birthday dinners and drinks. And then a special someone I'm seeing also happened to be there.
Nice.
And we had a good birthday time was had.
Okay. All right. That somewhat matches up with what I see you doing for your birthday. So it's not bad. I thought there'd be more beat poetry. More beat poetry for you.
No. Not beat poetry. Not even spoken word.
All right. All right.
Music definitely, but not beat poetry.
Okay. This is why we go over this. This is why we cover this information. And let's do more happiness. It is Thanksgiving week. Happy Thanksgiving to all of our listeners out there. Let's do a list. Kenyon's three things that he is thankful for right now.
Oh, wow. in this moment, this is...
I know. That's why we're starting positive. We're starting positive.
I'm thankful for, my friends and family, my community. I'm really thankful for, people, not just in the U.S., but I think globally, being bold and, taking action in the face of some really difficult, times right now. I'm really encouraged by what I see happening in many places with people really, kind of standing up, for justice.
Nice. Can we also say that you're thankful for that special someone too?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely thankful for him.
Okay. I'm trying to help you out here, buddy. I'm trying to help. Well, let's talk about, this is really our first, I feel like, real episode since the election. We had to take last week off because I was away, and the episode we did election week was kind of a blur that we threw together at the very last minute. So you are our first real post-election guest. And you do, the work that you do exists in so many different intersections. Are you able to wrap your mind around how this election will affect the work that you do? Is it too soon to know?
Well, I mean, there are some things that we know already. I think, one of the things that we all saw was, you know, Donald Trump kind of running on this, you know, idea of being, you know, this kind of outsider and this, you know, person who is really going to kind of shake things up in Washington and, you know, do things to make America great again. Well, a lot of the people that are a part of his transition team and the names that are being bandied about for different, you know, administration posts are, you know, pretty much the same, you know, GOP, Republican, conservative folks that we've seen, you know, for a long time. And, you know, so and many of them to the some of the furthest right of the people, but very closely associated with, you know, conservatives. So, you know, not so much change right. In that respect. And I think, you know, what it says to me and what it means to the things that I work on is, you know, we're just in a moment where, from a kind of standpoint of just, you know, obviously very visible, you know, forms of racism and xenophobia and sexism and homophobia, transphobia. We're seeing just people who feel like they can really stay and do anything under the guise of what a Trump administration means to them happen across the country. And I think from a kind of policy perspective, what we're going to see a lot of is a lot of things that the Republican Party has wanted to do for a long time, you know, in terms of, you know, privatizing, you know, many aspects of, you know, what have been public institutions to, you know, doing, you know, things that are, you know, much, you know, even more sort of violent in terms of mass deportations and their solutions to, you know, kind of working with the African-American community when you read them are all about just more policing and law enforcement as if, you know, black folks haven't been saying we've had enough of that. Right. So, you know, it'll be, those are the impacts I think that we will see and we'll be continuing to fight.
What's the word for the HIV prevention and treatment world? You know, there's so much to cover. There's so many different topics to speculate on how this new administration is going to affect things. I don't know that I've seen a ton on how it might affect funding for HIV prevention and treatment.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's in some respects too early to tell because we don't have, you know, the kinds of cabinet appointments or nominees have not been put forward in some key places that, you know, will directly impact HIV prevention or treatment and care. So, you know, we're still waiting to see about an HHS secretary of Health and Human Services or, you know, and under Health and Human Services is everything from the Center for Disease Control, the FDA, to the National Institutes of Health, all of those fall under HHS. And so whatever that top appointment is going to influence everything else. And I think we're not clear just yet. But what we do know is that, you know, Paul Ryan, I think people have to think about this administration perhaps less about Trump as a figure per se, but more about, you know, the agenda of, you know, Paul Ryan and of Vice President elect Mike Pence, who represent really the sort of two kind of aspects of the Republican coalition. So Paul Ryan being more of a kind of, you know, quote unquote small government, but really means, you know, gutting social welfare, social safety net programs for poor working class people. In favor of, you know, driving resources to the 1%, if you will.
Yeah.
And then we see Mike Pence, who very much represents some of that agenda, but also very much the kind of social conservative side. So somebody who, you know, has, you know, done everything from, you know, believe in kind of, you know, gay conversion therapy to, you know, just been a very kind of socially conservative on, you know, issues of, you know, reproductive access for women to to, kind of anti-LGBT rights. And the only thing we sort of know in terms of what we may be able to use strategically around HIV is, you know, Mike Pence was sitting governor of Indiana, still is, when, 2 years ago, this pretty significant HIV and hepatitis C outbreak happened in a southern, mostly white rural county of Indiana due to an opioid use epidemic that happened and still happening in that county. And that forced Mike Pence to, relax the sort of state ban on, syringe exchange programs and things like that that we have known for 3 decades are really effective in reducing, HIV infections among injection drug users. And so, if there's any sort of, sunshine in terms of HIV prevention, treatment, and care is that, Mike Pence was forced to actually implement some, evidence-based policy at the point that there was a crisis, particularly among a kind of white rural constituent base that would have voted for him, I'm sure, is how he got to office.
Yeah. Yeah, look, you've been doing this work for so long around empowerment and coalition building and activism, and I'm not sure folks really know what we're looking for right now, if we're looking for some hope to grab onto, or if anger should fuel us, or just which direction to go. And I will tell you, and obviously this dovetails with you being on the show, but I'm holding in my hands right now, and I've had it for, about a decade, I'm holding in my hands Letters from Young Activists. And I've used this book in class many, many times to get people talking. First of all, can you wrap your mind around the fact that this book is 10 years old at this point?
I know. I was 15 when it came out.
Which would be believable, except that you very foolishly put in the bio, Kenyon Farrow is a 30-year-old black gay man. I'm not sure why you had to be that specific in there.
I know. I should have channeled my inner Blanche Devereaux or something and avoided talking about my age, but...
Normally I would feel bad, but you outed yourself right there in the book. So it's just not my fault. But I would argue, and I feel like you would too, that there's some important lessons in that book that might help people out right now, even with this book being 10 years old. Does anything jump out at you from the process of putting this book together and just the words contained therein that people could grab onto right now?
Yeah, I think the thing, and I've been saying this to people for the last, 10 days now since the election result came in, and I think there's reason for us to be deeply concerned and reasons for people to be afraid, right? At the same time, what I've been saying to people is that, we've been here before.
Right.
Right, we've been here before. And in fact, that book, when you read it, actually, and you look at the collection of letters and voices in that book, the book was very much influenced by the kind of aftermath of the impact of the war on terror after 9/11, 2001, and kind of what was happening in this country under the Bush administration, in terms of, lots of kind of threats and repression of activists, and people being certainly targeted, for being Muslim, or appearing to be Muslim, or what people would assume to be, people attacking Sikhs as if, whatever they were somehow related to, anything happening in the Middle East. And, and so, we had that happening at the time that book was written. We had Hurricane Katrina happen at the time that we were, just finishing the editing of the book, and, which we saw, similar forms of kind of targeting and kind of blaming poor black people in New Orleans for what have been, decades long, government neglect of those levees, of environmental crises caused by drilling on the shores, and the sort of, the way that the coastline of Louisiana has also degraded, so it made the impact hit New Orleans, even harder. all of these things were happening right at the time that that book was written. And so, you know, I think when I think about what we're facing now, is really the, this isn't so much a new moment as it is the sort of full realization perhaps of what we were experiencing in the last decade, right, of the Bush era. There was very much a whole range of a kind of policy agenda that was, anti-LGBT, certainly anti-immigrant, that was clearly anti-Black, and a whole range of things. And it was also very much about, gutting the social safety net. We're talking about gutting public education and introducing more, kind of privatization of public schools under this sort of guise of choice, targeting of people through, and the sort of stop and frisk policies in New York City and many other cities, targeting Black and brown, young people. All these things have been happening, right? And, I think people maybe thought that we were kind of beyond a lot of those issues because of, the Obama administration and, having a somewhat more sort of open presidency, but certainly one that was not at all perfect, or in some cases, not even super progressive in a lot of ways. But people really feeling the real sort of blowback from that administration. I think for a lot of people, particularly younger people who don't necessarily remember the last decade, this feels new in a way that I think actually, if we just look at particularly the last 15 years, but we could go back further and say that the roots of this, as Utah Phillips, the poet, once said, the past didn't go anywhere.
Yeah. Again, I encourage everybody to pick that up, and you can get it anywhere. Fine books are sold. Letters from Young Activists. Again, everyone, we are here with award-winning writer and activist Kenyon Farrow. I will tell you, Kenyon, I feel overwhelmed even just reading the title, U.S. and Global Health Policy Director. And I'm just reading it. I don't have to live it. Does that ever get overwhelming to you? It's a lot.
It is a lot. It's a lot.
Couldn't we just do U.S. or just global? U.S. Right. And global? It's quite a bit,
and
Kenyon.
Global. Well, which is basically, it's like three jobs rolled into one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So it's kind of an interesting job. I've been at Treatment Action Group now for just over three years. And, in some ways it was a kind of a shift for me because I hadn't done kind of organizing and activist work that was really much about kind of science and research and really thinking about, the politics and funding issues of drug and treatment development, right, for people who are suffering, particularly from HIV, but also TB and hepatitis C. I work on all three. And it's been, for the course of most of my career, I really focused on intentionally on working just within the U.S. context because, I think that there's a lot of ways that, progressives in the United States, people think that, oh, there's a way in which like people can just think, oh, things are just so terrible somewhere over there. And so you can direct a lot of energy towards focusing on, particularly around health issues, right? We think things are just terrible in Africa, things are terrible in South Asia, things are terrible in Latin America, but like actually there are major kind of crises here happening that mostly go unspoken. For a long time, I specifically did not work on global issues or work in that space because, I felt a real commitment to doing the work here. But I also saw this as an opportunity, one, to sort of be able to kind of link those two things, particularly because the U.S. government influences so much of what happens internationally. And two, learn a lot. I think when we think about particularly around HIV and the sort of AIDS movement in the U.S., in a lot of ways, the movement has been kind of split in two over the particularly the last 20, 25 years. really with the, you know, kind of split from of my own organization, Treatment Action Group, when it was the Treatment and Data Committee that split off from ACT UP New York in 1992. You know, there kind of, for a long time, still was this sort of dichotomy between, you know, the folks who focused on, like, you know, kind of drugs and treat and drug development and treatment and, like, you know, organizing, you know, to kind of impact the FDA and the National Institutes of Health or with pharma companies and what they did, you know, that was seen kind of as, like, you know, the white gay boy work. And then it was like everybody else focused on some of the, you know, other issues, you know, impacting the epidemic, you know, harm reduction issues, housing, you know, sex work, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, part of what I wanted to do was to kind of bring these things together, that actually they work together. So for me taking this job, you know, being able to kind of look at, and I have learned a lot from kind of activists, you know, particularly in Africa, but globally, who, you know, there isn't this split between, you know, understanding, like, we need, you know, affordable treatments that, you know, are easy for people to take, that, you know, are and accessible to everybody, as much as we need housing and we need an end to criminalization of LGBT folks or criminalization of HIV or et cetera, right? That they, these things go hand in hand. And so a lot of my work has been trying to kind of bring these things together.
I was empowered by seeing the phrase end AIDS, you know, ending AIDS, just all over your timeline. I know you were recently at a policy summit, and that's a phrase that I feel like in a lot of circles we don't often hear as much as we should. People are confused as to whether or not that is going to be an immediately attainable goal. Opine on ending AIDS and where we are. I mean, that's such a ridiculously broad question, but I'm happy to even see those words together.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, it feels like, you know, either like, what are you talking about? Or, oh God, we keep hearing this every 5 years.
Right.
You know, the end is coming. And, you know, in a lot of ways, we have a long way to go, but we only have a long way to go because of political issues. At this point, you know, we're not at a point, you know, in the course of the AIDS epidemic that we know so much more about just the kind of basic science of the virus and what it's doing in the body and what it's not doing than we ever have before. We know we have, you know, an astounding number of, you know, antiretroviral treatments that we know are both really effective in terms of suppressing the virus, but we in the last few years have actually come to know that, you know, a person who, you know, gets what we call virally suppressed or has an undetectable viral load or whatever really has almost no chance of transmitting the virus. So when people actually get access to treatment that they're able to take and stay on treatment, that there's little threat of them passing on the virus, even when having condomless sex, right? And I don't think people really understand, people don't really know that that's true, right? That most of the transmissions that happen in this country and even globally are people who are not on treatment. So either people who don't know that they're positive or people who know they're positive, but for whatever reason are not in treatment or on treatment or in care at this point. So what we have in terms of the epidemic is are really political issues that are about, you know, the reasons why, you know, people don't have access to care still, even in this country. The reasons why we now have one drug approved that is one pill a day that people can take that they can prevent, you know, HIV acquisition in large part, you know, much like a birth control pill or something like that, that people writ large don't even know about. And, you know, and even some of the ways people can even access that is challenging. And then we still have laws that criminalize, you know, people, you know, criminalize HIV transmission or criminalize people who are positive, even just having sex and, you know, not disclosing or being accused of not disclosing or spitting on somebody or whatever. Like, we still have all these kind of political hurdles that have nothing to do with our actual ability to actually end the epidemic as we know it. And so to me, the fight at this point is, you know, a fight to make sure that the infrastructure that we need for people to get access to the kind of care that they need. So for people who are positive to be able to get access to the kind of care that that they need so that, you know, they have access to medications that they need and all the other supportive services they may need to maintain their health. That happens. And then as well as people who are negative but who may be at higher risk for acquiring HIV have what they need to stay negative, right?
Right.
Those are political problems. They're not big gaps in science or big gaps in questions that we have about what that, how the disease is transmitted and how to prevent it.
But all of our listeners are not U.S. and global health policy directors. So this, of course, begs the question, because we only have one of those. And although I think we probably need a ton more, because it's a, this is a lot of work that you've outlined. How can our listeners get involved? Like, if you could direct our listeners towards, okay, and here's a way that you could really help my Kenyan Pharaoh's efforts, what should we do first?
Sure. So first, I think right now is actually a really, really, really critical time. As people may have been hearing, you know, with this, the new administration coming in, Majority Leader Paul Ryan has said, you know, very bluntly that one of his goals is to repeal Obamacare, right, or repeal the Affordable Care Act. And what we know, you know, the impact that that will have on people with HIV is absolutely devastating. So, you know, one, with the states that expanded Medicaid, right, that gave a lot of people who were HIV positive access to comprehensive health care for the first time in their lives, right, who were, you know, too poor to afford or worked in jobs that didn't have adequate health care. And, you know, at best they could get, you know, Ryan White, you know, which would cover their specific HIV care. But people did not have access to primary care as a basic form of health care. Or if they made a little more money, access to even health care on the exchanges with subsidies to make it affordable. All of those things are under threat, not just for people with HIV, but for all of us. And,
right.
And I think, you know, it is really important for, I think, the LGBT community in particular to really be fighting against any regressive efforts to kind of roll back people having access to basic health insurance. Now, I will tell people from jump that I am a universal health care, single payer, Medicare for all, Medicaid for all, whatever you want to call it kind of girl, right? Like, that's me.
Right.
But I think we certainly do not have room to go further back. So I think that's one way people can get involved. So if you live in a state that, has not expanded the Affordable Care Act, first and foremost, those are phone calls, letters to your government, to your governor, your state, legislature, all of those folks who control that decision, people should be showing up at their doors and demanding that they do so before it's all gone. Second of all, and organizing your neighbors to do so. It's if you live even in a state that has expanded Medicaid, but say you now have a Republican governor or something else, you ought to be demanding that they, keep that piece in place. I think also there's that. One of the kind of interesting things that's also been happening is I was kind of a part of an effort, you know, kind of in the background in New York now a statewide plan that was adopted by Governor Cuomo in New York State to end the AIDS epidemic in New York State by 2020, and he's put, you know, millions of dollars behind this plan. The plan was really developed by community-based organizations and activists from around the state to do a range of things to really stop New York State from having about, 3,500 new infections a year. We're trying to get down to 750 a year and below in the next, few years. And now there are other jurisdictions that are doing the same thing. San Francisco, Washington State, Washington, D.C., there are conversations now happening in Massachusetts is also about to announce their plan on World AIDS Day. et cetera. Now, and there are groups of folks who are even working in places like Fulton County, which is Atlanta, Georgia, Houston, and Dallas. Even in the South, people are trying to do these plans at the local level. So, and I'm a part of a coalition called the Act Now in Days Coalition, which is helping to coordinate these local jurisdictions and advocates, people from the health department, community-based organization representatives to really help develop these plans, implement them, and then be talking to each other so that people learn from best practices in all places. And those things people can do, and if folks are interested in participating in that, I'm more than willing to point you to folks in your state or in your local jurisdiction that are doing that work at the local level. Or if you're in a place where there is no such thing, we're also helping people to start something. So I would encourage people to reach out to me, and I can get you plugged into some really interesting work, innovative work that we're still going to move forward with no matter what happens with the administration, because ultimately, you know, ending the epidemic in the U.S. and even globally, we're looking at this in different places. It's having big impacts in, like, you know, city by city, county by county, state by state. Like, that's how we're going to have to approach this. And so people can definitely get involved in that way.
Life-saving, life-altering work. I mean, this is a lot. You have to, on some level, recognize this is a lot. How do you, Kenyon Farrow, keep yourself motivated to keep doing this work? Because I would imagine that it is really heavy work. And it's not to say that there aren't so many different victories along the way. But I would also imagine, because I know, it's quite a bit of investment. How do you keep yourself invested in moving forward?
I wish I knew the answer. I mean, I will say this, it is difficult work. And sometimes it's, you know, having this particular election outcome was not what we expected,
right,
and is going to make the work much harder than what we were anticipating, in a Clinton administration, which, not just from basis of anything, or from just really objectively, whatever you think about Hillary Clinton, not like, actually met with her and was very well versed on HIV/AIDS issues, and she wasn't reading from a piece of paper. It was clear that it wasn't a conversation that somebody briefed her on 20 minutes before our meeting. She was pulling policy, law. She knew, you know, she had a range of a command of the issues. That, you know, this is now, going to be a different thing altogether. It's difficult for that reason. It's difficult because, an untold story in this country is that people are still dying of AIDS-related causes at young ages. And they're mostly transgender women, mostly transgender women of color, and
yeah,
mostly Black and brown gay men. Like, I've literally, just 2 months ago, one of my best friends, her 26-year-old brother, died of AIDS in New York City in Harlem Hospital at the end of September.
Yeah.
Right. So this is still happening. And in the South, this is happening in more numbers than should in 2016, or physicians I know who have people coming into care with Kaposi sarcoma and thrush and all the pneumonias and all the opportunistic infections that we thought that were over, in the 80s and 90s. So it's hard for those reasons, and to still hear about these things and have impacted me personally. But I stay in the work because, who else is going to do it?
Right.
But us. And I think therefore, all the listeners at home, whether it's HIV, whether it's, thinking about these probably more bolder kind of religious freedom laws that are probably going to creep back into existence at the state and local levels because of the new administration, local state officials are going to feel more bold to try these things. Whether it's education, whatever it is, whether it's kind of ending the war on drugs, whatever issue that is about, social justice speaks to you, if this is the time to do it, right? This is the time that we need to be actually fighting on all fronts and talking to each other And we could have a range of disagreements about, you know, things or whatever. But I think, you know, this is not the time to hide from your relatives at Thanksgiving who voted for Trump. This is the time to actually have conversations with them and stay in dialogue with them as things begin to emerge, that people can then look at the impact of what it is they actually brought forth. So, you know, I think this is not a time to shy, to be shrinking violets. This is a time that we really need to be engaged. And engaging does not also mean, you know, necessarily watching cable news. I think this is, I heard Sandra Bernhardt, who I love, mention this on television the other day. She said, you know, she's like, this is the time for clear thinking. And I think that's a key piece, clear thinking in order to have kind of clear strategies and engagement. And so, you know, I really am, that's the only thing that I'm fueled by what, you know, people both currently and historically have been able to do in moments of real crisis, and ways people have been able to mount a response that overturns what is really threatening.
Yeah. Yeah. Sandra Bernhardt said, turn the TV off.
Yeah. Yeah. Turn the cable news off, turn the TV off. This is time for clear thinking. And I've actually been following that, you know, since she said it. And I found that it is helping kind of, you know, and I know a lot of people have felt a lot of anxiety because, you know, just things feel so unknown. But yeah, you know, so for me, just in terms of practice, if I stop watching morning news television, I just listen to, you know, news on the radio, NPR or whatever, and, you know, for an hour, 8 to 9, and then that's it. And I might watch a little news in the evening, but that's, you know, like that's all I'm doing. I'm not, you know, constantly following every little bit, because I don't think, you know, every little bit in real time is always going to necessarily bring about the best strategy. So stay engaged in it, but also be careful about what you take in.
Yeah. And maybe do some self-care. Let me cue up the last question. Kenyon Farrow, the film critic, should people want some entertainment, is there perhaps a movie that they should go see that's in the theaters right now?
If I had to say, I would go see Moonlight. Yeah. It opens, you know, everywhere. I think it opened everywhere this Friday this past Friday or the Friday coming up this week. And I just now I've seen it twice. I saw it here in the D.C. area where I live, and I was in Jackson, Mississippi this weekend and was helped actually bring it to so that they could screen during Black Pride in Jackson. And, you know, I would say the thing, one, for anybody, it's just a beautiful film.
Yeah.
I mean, it's beautifully shot. It's beautifully written. It's beautifully directed. The performances are astounding, really astounding. If you know that the three actors who play the main character from childhood, teenager to an adult, that they were not allowed to, they didn't even meet, I think,
yeah,
when they were cast. Which is astounding because you just see so much of how, like, you know, it's the person before they even start talking, right? It's like, the way they carried that one character from all those ages. But I think it's a beautiful film just for anyone who's interested in film and needs a good story. But also, I think in this particular moment where I think we spent, you know, the early aughts, you know, roughly 2000 to 2010, the only conversations that were had about, you know, Black gay men in this country were, you know, that, or about the down low,
right,
which was a bunch of foolishness, or, you know, were just kind of what emerged in the last kind of, you know, I would say 5 or 6 years with, you know, all the gay men you just see on like every reality show,
right?
You know, all the Black gay men that are like everybody's hairdresser, everybody's like stylist, or all this kind of foolishness. And not that there's nothing wrong with any of those professions. There's nothing wrong with like Sims or anything like that. I don't want to say that, but you know, I think what this film sort of does is, one, it really makes visible like you know, black gay men who are just or not any of that and are kind of the folks that are in communities. And I think for even people who are not black gay men, certainly being in hostile school environments,
yeah,
a lot of people have relationships too, and what that does to people's psyche. And also, I think in this particular film, you know, when you see the character as an adult, and who is the kind of person, given all the things that we are now seeing in this country in real time with police stop and frisk and police shooting of unarmed black men, and all of the assumptions that people can make about black men because they dress a certain way, they're built a certain way, they're just black in general. But like, what you don't like, even for somebody, you know, who, you know, people may perceive as a drug dealer, these things, like, in this, you see how somebody got there, right? Like what their story was. And everybody has, they're no monsters, right? People get to how they are because of life. And I think this film does a great job of telling that, a particular kind of story that I think is relevant to a lot of us, but particularly, I think, for black gay men.
Yeah. And to answer your question, yes, that was a setup. My partner and I saw the film. We saw it this past weekend, and just brilliant. It was so brilliant and so affecting, you know, on so many different levels, both cinematically and topically, and brilliant. So everyone, get out there, go see Moonlight. Listeners, this is what else we need you to do. Please learn more about the Treatment Action Group. You can stroll on over to treatmentactiongroup.org. There's stuff that we all can be doing to educate ourselves and thus help out the U.S. and Global Health Policy Director. You can, of course, learn more about Kenyon by strolling on over to Kenyon Farrow. We will certainly link to that. I can't think of anybody else I would rather have on our first real post-election show. I love chatting with you. Do you know it's been 7 years since your first appearance on our show?
Oh my God, wow.
We've been doing this a while.
Right. Well, I'm glad to anytime.
All right, Kenyon, please keep doing what you're doing. It's so important, and I know you know that, but you have a way with words, you have a way with your pen, you are really making a difference, and even your Facebook feed keeps me informed, and I appreciate that. So please keep doing what you're doing, Kenyon.
Okay, no problem. Take care of yourself.
Well, we do have some time left on this week's episode, so let's get to all the latest LGBTQ news that's out there. There is a new Google Hangout for LGBT families. It's being called a small beacon of hope in the aftermath of Donald Trump becoming president-elect of these United States. So what has happened since Donald Trump has been elected, if you have not heard? There have been over 700 incidents. 700 documented incidents of harassment fueled by the news of his election. Well, Path to Parenthood, which is a U.S. non-for-profit organization, and fertility and life coach Kristen Darcy have joined together to provide urgent information for existing and hopeful LGBT parents. Ken Mosian, Path to Parenthood's executive director, said this, quote, "We've created this hangout to help LGBT persons clearly understand what immediate and future steps they need to take to protect their relationship and their families, and to provide a realistic timeline for the changes that may occur to marriage equality and a woman's right to choose." Well, this Google Hangout is rumored to include prominent attorneys and include information on potential changes to marriage equality, second parent adoption, and parentage procedures, plus passport and birth certificate advice for children of LGBT parents. So you can search for that. It's a Google Hangout. Just search for Path to Parenthood, the number 2, Path to Parenthood, and you will find that Google Hangout. There is happy news out there. If you guys have not seen this, it is such a lovely, lovely clip. President Obama got all kinds of choked up as he awarded Ellen DeGeneres the Presidential Medal of Freedom. TV star and proud lesbian Ellen DeGeneres looked emotional as she received the Presidential Medal of Freedom this week. The award was presented at the White House in a special ceremony held by President Obama. Believe it or not, it's been almost 2 decades since Ellen came out, long before most stars felt able to, and in a time when showbiz and Hollywood readily refused work to LGBT people for fear of the reaction. President Obama spoke of how Ellen's decision to come out and to be a role model for LGBTQ Americans had initially harmed her career, and he called for people to recognize her convictions. He said this, quote, "Ellen reminds us that we have more in common than we realize. It's easy to forget now, when we've come so far, where now marriage is equal under the law, just how much courage was required for Ellen to come out on the most public of stages almost 20 years ago, just how important it was, not just for the LGBT community, but for all of us to see somebody so full of kindness and light, somebody we liked so much, somebody who could be our neighbor or our colleague or our sister, challenge our own assumptions, remind us that we have more in common than we realize, push our country in the direction of justice. What an incredible burden that was to bear, to risk your career like that. People don't do that very often, and then to have the hopes of millions on your shoulders." All that said by President Obama. The Medal of Freedom is presented annually to individuals who have made especially meritorious contributions to the security of national interests of the United States, to world peace, or to cultural or other significant public or private endeavors. Among the other recipients this year are Robert De Niro, Bill and Melinda Gates, Tom Hanks, Diana Ross, Vin Scully, and Bruce Springsteen. So, and Springsteen himself, a huge advocate of the LGBT community. Earlier this year, Bruce Springsteen spoke out against North Carolina's discriminatory anti-LGBTQ law, HB2, and now the governor behind it, Pat McCrory. Well, if you've not been paying attention to what's going on with that election, even though Election Day was a few weeks ago, Pat McCrory is still hanging on. By some tallies, he either lost by 6,000 or 8,000 votes, but he is trying to find a back door to win there as the governor of North Carolina. You should look that up. If you don't know what's going on with Pat McCrory, look that one up. It's quite an unbelievable story. But again, huge congratulations to Ellen DeGeneres. Love seeing that. In some research news, a new study finds that HIV and smoking can be deadly as a combination. HIV-positive people who smoke cigarettes could be putting themselves at huge risk, and smoking could be more harmful than the HIV virus itself. A new study has found that, given higher rates of smoking among HIV-positive people, smoking regularly could reduce the lifespan of someone taking effective medication by twice as much as HIV itself. The study also found that those who do not adhere to medication or those not receiving care also have a lower life expectancy if they smoke. Fascinating stuff. Dr. Krishna P. Reddy, who is the author of the study and a Harvard Medical School instructor, said this, quote, "Smoking is now the leading killer of people with HIV who are on antiretrovirals." Dr. Reddy said that around 2 decades ago, many HIV-positive people did not live long enough to experience the effects of smoking, but now that HIV medication is much more effective, life expectancy is almost the same among HIV-positive people as those without the virus. there is a much larger proportion of smokers within HIV-positive people, as found by this study by the National Institutes of Health. That was actually back in 2011 that they first discovered this, found that 50 to 70% were smokers. 50 to 70% of HIV-positive people, compared with around 17% of the adult population as estimated by the Center for Disease Control. Fascinating stuff. So again, HIV-positive people who smoke cigarettes could be putting themselves at a huge risk, and smoking can be more harmful than the HIV virus itself. Definitely something to keep an eye out for. The American Family Association, the anti-equality group, the American Family Association, they have launched a naughty or nice list of stores you should shop in or avoid this Christmas. The organization that continually attacks the LGBT community said some shops should be avoided due to secular forces. So you can go on their website and, I don't know, I might encourage you to shop on the naughty list. I would go with the naughty list. By the way, that includes Barnes & Noble, Best Buy, Dollar General, Family Dollar, The Gap, Office Depot, PetSmart. I go to a lot of these places, folks. So there you go. You can find the naughty list. It might be the list that I would push you towards from the American Family Association. Let's turn our attention to Texas. A Dallas church voted to let LGBT people become full participants in the church, and now that church is facing being removed from the denominational body. The Wilshire Baptist Church voted 577 to 367 to let LGBT people become members, lay leaders, potential clergy, and brides and grooms. The moment the results came in, the Baptist General Convention of Texas, commonly called the Texas Baptists, they started proceedings to remove their affiliation with the church. The Washington Post reported that a young member of the congregation said, quote, "You perform the wedding of my parents in this church. If I fall in love and want to get married, my question is, will my church community support me?" Reverend George Mason responded this, quote, "It became increasingly difficult for me to justify as I kept looking in the eyes of people that I loved and seeing the presence of Christ in them, and as I honestly looked at the scripture and realized that it was not as clear as I thought it was, it became difficult for them to justify not letting LGBT people receive all the same rights that everyone else in that church receives." Well, in the run-up to the vote, 250 members of the church sent letters to all the other members calling for them to vote against allowing LGBT people to receive equal treatment. The church also received a letter from the Texas Baptists warning that they would be kicked out if the vote was won in favor of inclusion. And a spokesperson for the Texas Baptists has now said this, quote, "All Texas Baptists are loving, respectful, and welcoming to all people, but while we are welcoming, we are not affirming." I want to read that quote again. This is a quote from the Texas Baptist, from a spokesperson from the Texas Baptist. "All Texas Baptists are loving, respectful, and welcoming to all people, but while we are welcoming, we are not affirming." It's really how you're able to draw that distinction, it just boggles my mind. How many times over the past 8 years have we talked about what a horrible choice we are forcing people to make between their faith and their sexual orientation? It is an artificial choice. And I know this isn't the most academic thing I could say right now. It's just so ridiculously unfair. And that's what's happening in Texas. They might be welcoming, they might be loving and respectful, but they are not affirming. So there you go. In Massachusetts, gosh, this story is just ridiculous. The out gay mayor of a town in Massachusetts has had so many of his signs vandalized. That out gay mayor is Alex Morse of Holyoke, Massachusetts. He was on our show years and years and years ago. I've met him so many different times. He was first elected to be the mayor of Holyoke when he was just 22 years old, and now a ton of his posters have been defamed. He said, quote, "It's more of a threatening message than usual, and given the context of the culture that seems to have been elevated since the Trump election, I thought it was important to shine a light on this language language and behavior. It's different than writing a note that says, I don't support gay marriage or I don't support rights for someone. But to demean someone's humanity based on their sexuality takes it to another level. That's a pretty disappointing feeling, he concluded. It's more important than ever before to speak out and come together. And so he has now filed a criminal report. Holyoke, Massachusetts, a pretty liberal darn place right by Northampton, Massachusetts, but a really important story to highlight because, yes, this can happen anywhere. Can happen anywhere. And finally, McDonald's. McDonald's has settled in a discrimination case over allegations that an employee was sacked for being HIV positive. The McDonald's restaurant, owned and operated by Matthews Management Company and Peach Orchard Inc. in Bentonville, Arkansas, agreed to pay $103,000. It faced accusations of discrimination after a man said he was fired after management found out he is HIV positive. The U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission announced that the restaurant would pay out to settle the case. A regional attorney for the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission said this, quote, EEOC remains committed to protecting employees from disability discrimination on the job. EEOC commends the companies for working with us quickly to resolve this matter prior to trial. So there you go, McDonald's paying out $103,000 for settling a case after they fired someone, allegedly for him being HIV positive. Takes a lot of guts to raise your voice in that way and say, you know what, whether I'm the mayor of Holyoke, whether I'm working at a McDonald's in Arkansas, I have experienced discrimination here and I want people to know about it. Takes a lot of courage. And all we can do, folks, is try to create that climate where people can raise up their voices and say, look, this is my experience. This is my experience and I want to talk about it and I want to be treated fairly and I want to be treated equally and I want to be treated respectfully and I want to be affirmed, not just welcomed and respected and loved, but also affirmed. Not too much to ask, and certainly not too much to ask in this, the Thanksgiving season. Well, I did say a couple weeks ago that I had huge news, kind of pales in comparison to the election, but we'll talk about it more in the next couple weeks and certainly in the next couple months. I sold my first book. That's right. I sold my first book. So you can learn all about the travelogue that I sold. You can just go to kenschneck.com, kenschneck.com/seriously. And you can learn all about the travelogue that I wrote. It's called Seriously, What Am I Doing Here? The Adventures of a Wondering and Wandering Gay Jew. That's me. And you can learn all about it. kenschneck.com/seriously. It's going to be released by 1984 Publishing, probably right around May. There's going to be an audio book, a lot of excitement happening. And if you want to learn more about that, if you go to kenschneck.com/seriously, then you can enter in your email address and you will be notified when the book is ready for you all to order. I couldn't have done this all without you guys supporting the show over the years, so I'm really proud of this, and I'm excited for you guys to read it because I think you're very much going to enjoy it. You will smile, you might cry a little bit, but my goal, as ever, is to make people pause for 2 seconds out of their day. That's my goal, just to get you guys to pause. What better week to pause than this, the Thanksgiving week? My thoughts are with all of you. I hope you guys are taking care of yourselves. I hope you're taking care of each other. I hope you have a ton to be thankful for. I am certainly thankful for you. I'm certainly thankful for Kenyon Farrow and all the great work he's been doing. And yeah, you guys get out there. You know what to do. Go use your voice the way you know how to use it to make a difference for your LGBTQ and ally brothers and sisters. Use your voice, make a difference, and while you're out there doing all of that and giving thanks, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?